Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
And welcome to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital here this evening with Mac Burns, the Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. Good evening, Mac. We have a very special guest here today.
We do. One of my top favorite people. I can't say my favorite person because my wife and son might actually somehow hear this show.
But the top three?
Yes. Yeah. I would definitely put it the top five.
Oh, the top five.
This is my daughter, Rachel Fackler, is a guest for no other reason. Like, we didn't have guests that canceled at the last minute or anything else. We've wanted to have you on the show for a long time. So we're very excited that you're here.
I'm excited to be here.
Well, are you?
I am.
Well, you're excited to be ever. You're always excited.
That's true. But what we get to talk about today is especially exciting for me.
Mac, we're going to talk about Mac and all the dark secrets that we don't know about.
Oh, they're all out there.
Oh, okay.
All right. There's nothing.
We'll save that for another one.
But we actually, you know, we're T-minus a week from the big ice storm.
Yes.
And you lost power for just a little bit.
Yep, 4 hours or 4.5 hours, but, you know, two young children, so it felt like, you know, 24 hours.
Is it like dog years or something?
It's
like by their age, you times it by a certain number.
It's fine. You know, my five-year-old loved it. She said it was the best day ever. I mean, when it came back on, she was really disappointed. So she did, you know, she was happy. And since we had a gas stove and everything, we still ate hot food and we had fire. So
it was just kind of like this wacky little fun experience that it was dark.
Very lucky.
See, I live near Alderbrook and we were out for the entire weekend.
Oh my goodness.
From like Friday till Monday morning. So our Valentine's Day was very special.
Just a little different. Yes. Yeah. Very special.
Hey, before we get any further, I've got egg on my face. Can you tell I have a big giant pile of scrambled eggs and omelet all over my face?
Because something very near and dear to our heart had a birthday and we forgot to acknowledge it.
We didn't send a card. We didn't say happy birthday. We didn't post anything.
I mean,
on
I'm
Facebook.
Born and raised here.
Yeah. We did not mention Oregon's birthday last week.
Yes. We are so sorry to the entire state of Oregon.
We apologize.
We love you. Please don't kick us out.
We won't forget you next year.
No, we won't.
We'll make it up with a really nice gift next year.
There we go. We won't move. How about that?
So 1859, February 14th, our great state of Oregon was formed. And we did a show on this date and did not reference that at all.
But we focused a lot on wine and chocolate. So,
you know,
our brains were elsewhere.
That's right. It's the chocolate.
We
had the endorphins or whatever it is from chocolate.
Even though we didn't have any ourselves.
Well, we talked about it.
We did, yes.
So shall we get to the big history highlights?
Let's do it.
All right. Let's see on this day. And this is tomorrow.
Yep.
February 22nd. On this day in 1819, the U.S. acquires Spanish Florida.
That was on my list too.
I know both of you like Florida, so.
Yep. And in my notes, it's called Eastern Florida. And it is Eastern, but it's actually North Florida, which was very small at the time because they didn't have the South part yet.
And that's where Rachel was born.
Oh.
Yeah.
And where were you born?
Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Okay.
She's a Floridian.
There we go. I love it. But Miami, Florida, or Florida State?
It's really not fair to say I'm necessarily Floridian. Definitely my toddler stomping grounds, but I've been here since I was 8.
You were smart enough to leave the state by like age 4.
So it's fine. See, you know, I'm, as a Miami grad, I'm okay with that because you didn't say Florida or Florida State. You just said, you know,
I will say though, and especially after the loss of Amazing Stories comic book shop here in Astoria, Fort Lauderdale continues to have my favorite comic shop in the entire world. And that is plenty enough reason to go back and return and visit.
There you go.
We might get a little geeky today.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it.
Let's see. 1854, the first meeting of the Republican Party. And it meets in Michigan.
Okay.
Remember the Party of Lincoln. 1856, the first national meeting of the Republican Party, and it meets in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
1968, not a good one. It's good that it ended. The Tet Offensive ends. And of course, that was the big wake-up call that we're really not winning in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. It was shocking, and it was on TV, live, and in person, and in color. And it just turned everyone's opinion against the war at that point.
Awful.
1980, the Miracle on Ice. The U.S. hockey team beats the Soviets.
How exciting.
How exciting. I never saw the movie. Wasn't Kurt Russell in a movie about that?
Was it a Disney movie?
Probably.
Yeah, sounds like it.
Because isn't Kurt Russell in every Disney movie?
Right. Yeah. It's a lot.
I'm old enough to remember when he's like the computer that wore tennis shoes or something like that. Okay, but our history highlight of the day, the thing that had the most impact on history, in my opinion, 1732. George Washington is born.
One of your top presidents.
I go back and forth between whether he's number one or number two.
Okay.
Because he sets the stage, and he is the man for the moment. And and while I do not subscribe to the great white man of history, he was the right guy. And somebody else, and things could have gone a lot of different ways and a lot of different manners. I mean, it could have been the war itself.
Mm-hmm.
It could have been the way that the presidency was set up. I mean, he set so many norms that we take for granted.
Yeah.
So that's why I always go back and forth between him and Lincoln. So I do think his being born was significant because things could have gone very different for our nation had he not been the guy.
Yeah, agree. Another person born on this day in history in 1857. You missed Lord Robert Baden-Powell, the founder of the
Boy Scouts.
Yeah.
Lord Baden-Powell.
I thought you would mention that.
I'm shocked I missed that one.
I have another presidential one. In 1935, all plane flights over the White House are barred because they are disturbing the sleep of President Roosevelt. And in my opinion, that's something only a man would do.
Yeah, that's not good. I'm always amused at people that buy like a house or an apartment near an airport or train tracks, and then they get all mad.
And they're shocked. The right.
Like,
yeah.
You knew where you were buying the property.
Well,
I back when I was in Wichita, I had an apartment that was right next to the train tracks, and I could always tell. I mean, I could be on the phone with somebody and be like, "What's that noise?" And I said, "I don't know." I totally tuned it out, except for the one that was 6:45 in the morning. I knew if I wasn't in the shower, I was running late.
Oh, there you go.
That was the only one I still like tuned into and heard, and the thing must have gone by like 8-9 times a day. But the only one I ever paid attention to and could actually.
Well.
Here, like even TV, watching TV, I wouldn't even notice it.
That's good.
So, but President Franklin Roosevelt needs to sleep.
Yeah. So, I just thought of all the reasons. Like he could have had a lot of reasons, right? I mean, safety, security, but that's the story.
And how loud are the planes going over?
And why is your home not better insulated? It's huge.
That's funny. That makes me laugh.
Yep.
He was very delicate.
There we go.
Although I like FDR too. So.
Yes.
Okay, but we're not here to talk about FDR or planes.
No.
So Rachel Fackler, my daughter, we're going to talk about a specific point in your life that you are now 2 years removed from.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But how did you come to, you were in Japan teaching English.
Yes.
And you'd never visited Japan before.
No, though I wanted to.
You'd never taken a Japanese language course.
Not... Certainly not as extensively as I had once I was actually in Japan.
That's right. You did take a short one at the Clatsop Community College, didn't you?
Yes,
that's right. Okay. So what is this interest in Japan and how did that happen?
So I can definitely say it probably traces back to when I was little, like 5 years old. And I suppose when I was five, mom wasn't exactly letting me watch Pokemon at the time, but certainly watching a lot of cartoons like Sailor Moon and Yu-Gi-Oh! That had come out of Japan. And at the time, I didn't realize that these were specifically Japanese cartoons. I just thought, hey, this is a really cool style. There's a lot of flashing lights and bright colors and these beautiful extreme gestures. This is the art student in me talking right now. That just I absolutely loved. And I watched various anime throughout the years. And as I got a little older and I learned, wait, there are comic book versions of these same shows I'm watching. Let me get a hold of those comic books. Wait, why are these comic books printed backwards? And that started at that point, started to learn these aren't, this isn't something that America has produced. This is something that this truly small country, Japan, has produced. I'm like, well, now I'm a little interested to see what this country is all about. And I have even the person I really have to thank, I think, for starting that interest was my third grade elementary school teacher, third and fourth grade elementary school teacher. His wife was from Japan, and she would come into our classroom and teach us a little Japanese. She would teach us some origami. My teacher had this refrigerator box in the corner of the classroom that he cut to be a small tea room so we could go in and have a nice quiet space to read books on the little tatami.
So teachers being special, who was that teacher?
This was Mark Donakai. And I know he was with, gosh, he was with the district for many years. He's unfortunately no longer with the district. I do hope he's doing very well, because I've had a lot of teachers certainly in my 26 years of life, but he was a particularly special one and clearly impactful, as my interest in Japan has led all the way to me actually moving there. And not just as a tourist, but someone who's actually living there in this small, fairly remote fishing village on the opposite side of the Pacific.
Okay, so you go off to college to be a teacher, mm-hmm. but how do you actually end up in Japan?
So I first learned, so the program I went through was called the JET program, the Japanese Exchange and Teaching Program. And I'd known about this program since I was in high school as the vice president of the Japanese Culture Club. Thank you.
This is the moments that are like this that I wish we had video. She acted very important when she said
did.
That.
I yes. was very important. I'm still important. So that's where I first learned about the JET program. My older friends had an interest in it, and they were planning, once they graduated from college, they were going to apply to it. And I thought that just sounded awesome. And in order to do the JET program, you did need a bachelor's degree. It doesn't really matter what degree you had, just as long as you had college experience, you were good to go. My college experience was nice and friendly with this, because though I was an art student, I had taken a lot of educational preparation classes. But by the time I graduated from undergrad, I wasn't quite ready to leave home yet. I'm a huge homebody, and I do love Astoria so much. I just wasn't quite ready to leave just yet. So I went straight into my master's degree, where I got a master's in elementary education. And I think that was the real pin that when I eventually did move on to apply for the JET program, they saw, oh, here's this person who's not only in the educational program, who's gone through an educational program, clearly has an interest in teaching small kids, and has actually been endorsed in teaching students for whom English is not their first language, checking all these boxes. But I'd had a history of a variety of other Japanese American friendship programs, if you will. One of the most, I think, certainly local and I think more well-known in this area, called the Friends of Ranald McDonald. Ranald McDonald being the first American teacher of English in Japan, born in Astoria, and basically marooned himself off the coast of Japan, was taken under arrest, as at the time Japan was completely closed off, especially to Western countries. They were kind of in a point of trying to restore the idea of Imperial Japan and trying to get those kinds of affairs in order. So basically, going back to Ranald McDonald, he marooned himself off the coast of Japan. He was taken prisoner. And basically, they found, while he was in prison, he wasn't quite like these other American guys who were belligerent and unkind. He made an effort to learn the language. And anyone in the system who knew him, they were like, well, this guy's different. And he wants to actually talk with us. He doesn't just want to yell at us and all that. we want to be this guy's friend. And basically, he worked his way up from being a prisoner all the way to teaching, I believe it was the advisors of the Emperor of Japan, English, and ultimately ended up being the reason Japan was able to reopen and allow certainly Western world to come back into their ports.
When Commodore Perry showed up,
yes,
they were able to communicate.
Yeah.
Because the advisors to the emperor could speak English. So mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons that Japan did open up, is that communication ability was already there because of Randall McDonald.
Yes. So he was a huge and as anyone who knows the story, they recognize him as this unsung hero of Japanese-American relations and positive Japanese-American relations. So not only having myself coming back to talking about me, having an educational background, I also had a background in this understanding of what it meant to be to build a relationship between our two countries, because that's the exchange part of the JET program's acronym, Japanese Exchange and Teaching. It's not just that we're bringing English over there, we're also bringing Japan back to us, and we are further solidifying those positive relationships between our two countries.
So how long were you there, and what grades were you teaching?
So I was there for 1 year.
Okay.
And I taught from third grade to eighth grade. And then sometimes I got to hang out with the kindergartners and the first graders. And unfortunately, we were not able to do preschoolers. I think there were weather conditions that it got very snowy over there. So the time that we would usually pair up with the preschool kids, we were unfortunately unable to do that. But I got to work with a bunch of different kids.
So you weren't in Tokyo. Where were you sent, and how did that happen? And were you able to choose, or did they just randomly send you somewhere and describe the town that you were in?
Absolutely. So I feel like I got the absolute luck of the draw. I did not want to be in Tokyo. I didn't want to be in a large city. I wanted to live in, I wanted to live in the countryside of Japan. So while I've always liked cities, I've always preferred smaller towns. And in the application process, they do allow you to write down locations that you would like to live in. But I was sort of the feeling, while I would prefer to be as north as I possibly can, I was rooting for Hokkaido, specifically partly because Sapporo and Portland are actually sister cities. So I thought, oh, maybe I'll be able to get over there. And at the very north point of Hokkaido are the Rishiri Islands, where Randall McDonald ruined himself off of. So sort of do my own little Randall McDonald pilgrimage. But it didn't really matter to me where I was placed, as long as I was in Japan. I mean, the fact that I was able to be a part of this was incredible. But they put me about as north as they possibly could in Tohoku. So the main island of Japan before you literally get on a ferry up into Hokkaido. I was in the Aomori prefecture, and I was in a small, very similar to Astoria, a small fishing village with a beautiful boardwalk, approximately 10,000 people living there, called Hashikami. And I'll say this multiple times, but I don't think I could have been put in a better place. Everyone was so wonderful, so welcoming. They still are. I'm still in contact with some folks over there. And it was a perfect location because we did have a city about 20-minute drive away, Hachinohe, which was a pretty decently sized city, especially for this very remote area of Japan. We call it the Inaka, the countryside of Japan. And it was about 2 hours away from the really, really big city, the capital city of Aomori City. So it was, you could certainly, if you wanted to actually visit a mall or be part of some big stores, you could do that. But it fit my just small, cozy, little small style of living where everyone knows everyone and truly everyone knew everyone.
I love that.
Okay, so you kind of learned how to speak Japanese passably. Mm-hmm. So why don't you say, we'll be right back on an adventure in history.
Ima, chotto mate. Chotto mate.
February 26, 1940. Like magic. That's what our customers say about our welding. Our many years of combined experience and modern equipment combine to make all our mending jobs perfect. The next time you break or dent metal equipment, don't consider buying new parts until consulting us, Astoria Machine and Welding Works.
February 13th, 1905. Russian baths. At the bathhouse on Astor Street, which are open both day and night, with separate accommodations for ladies, the best Russian baths in the city can be secured at moderate cost and the best of treatment. Professional rubbers are in attendance, and private rooms for the night can be secured. George Hill, proprietor.
And welcome back to An Adventure in History.
Now, how come you didn't say that in Japanese?
Oh, well, next time. Next time. We do have a very special guest here today talking about her trip to Japan, teaching English there. Thank you so much for joining us. We're loving learning about this town. Sounds like very similar to Astoria.
Very.
Have you been back there since you came home?
Unfortunately not. If only I had the ability to see into the future. I was really hoping for either this past summer or even this coming summer to possibly return. Unfortunately, certain health conditions in our world
sure
don't permit that. But I do hope as soon as it is safe to do so, and after I've done a little bit of family visiting of my own, funny enough, over in Florida, I hope to head over there again. I miss it.
Yeah. So you are now a teacher in the Astoria School District.
That's
right. So describe differences in the educational systems.
Absolutely. So I'd say on the elementary school level, Japanese elementary schools, I think they really value a lot of self-exploration and freedom. One of the things I absolutely loved, it might be actually my favorite thing, little girls and boys absolutely loved to go out into the grass, and they'd have their little bug boxes and their little bug catching nets. And that's what they would do on their recess breaks, is go out, and if they weren't playing tag, they were out collecting bugs and little lizards. And I had one little boy who was one of my favorites. He'd try and show me the lizards, and I knew he was trying to gross me out and get a reaction, but having a lizard as a pet of my own, I love lizards, so I would be very excited, and his confused little face was just the best. And then me trying to tell him, okay, let's release the lizards now, my sweet one. So I think that permission for kids to just go out and explore kind of all over the school is very different than what we have here. We have our playgrounds, which are a little more enclosed. I think independence is seen a little differently. Whereas here we have one elementary, or I guess in our case, two elementary schools for the whole entire town. Over in Japan, we had about six elementary schools for the entire town. So whereas we take buses to go to whatever school, the kids can walk to their schools because they're literally within a mile walking distance, or I suppose kilometer walking distance, as they're on the metric system for measurement. So when you see or hear stories of, oh, they let their kids just walk to and from school, even as 5-year-olds or 4-year-olds, that is true, but they also live much closer to their schools than perhaps a kiddo living out in Lewis and Clark, who now has to trek all the way to Astor Elementary School. It's quite a difference.
So is school size then a lot smaller, or did it vary?
It definitely varies. I had one school that literally had 30 children in the entire school.
Oh, wow.
So for one class, I only had one fourth grader, and we would just sort of put her with the fifth grade, or put her with the third graders, or with the fifth graders as she got older. And then I had a school that had, oh gosh, maybe 300 kids.
Okay.
About, so quite a bit larger. So it, and that was, you could tell with my 30 kids, it was a more remote neighborhood, not as many families over there. Whereas my school with 300 kids, that was basically downtown Hashikami, right in the center of it all. So they had a lot more kiddos.
So I'm curious, did you find the comic book shops near this small little town, or did you travel to go find those? Because obviously you had to have wanted to go to them.
Yeah, 100%. And the wonderful thing about Japan is that their secondhand culture is amazing. Something that I absolutely loved and appreciated, there's this element of you want to make sure you take care of the things that you have. I know sometimes we can think of, oh, if it breaks, we'll just get a new one. They're very, let's put it right back in the box when we're done with it. So even if you go to a secondhand shop, everything is in such nice condition and for so cheap. I basically just lived in the secondhand stores. It was great. And a lot of them had a lot of comic books, and all within about 15 minutes of my house.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. So what were the lunches when you came back? You talked about the school lunches a little bit. So talk about that.
Oh my gosh. So another huge difference between Japanese American culture is in American culture, we go to a lunchroom and the kids go through the lunch line. The teachers go to their teacher's lounge or perhaps eat in their classrooms. In Japan, the teachers eat with their students and they eat in the lunchroom itself. We do have a lunch lady, but rather than the lunch person, but rather than the lunch person necessarily giving you a tray of the food as you go through in line, he or she will prepare all the food at once, basically give these vats of rice and the vat of soup and the vat of meat and salad. And the kids themselves will take turns. They'll get up in their aprons and their bandanas to stay clean, and they'll serve the food out to the other kids. So everyone partakes, they clean together, they make sure everyone is fed, they wait till everyone has their plates in front of them, including the teacher, and we say, itadakimasu, which doesn't have a direct translation to English, but basically is something along the lines of, thank you for this meal. And then you eat together, and the food is, it's so good. It's really well balanced. If you have anything fried, it's a very special occasion, like once a month kind of thing. If you have a fried food, sometimes you'll have a sweet dessert off to the side. But again, very once in a while, every lot of fish, always a lot of fish. Hamburger was a once a month treat.
Okay, you got 30 seconds. What's your favorite place that you visited there?
Terashitakanon. So Terashitakanon was a special Shinto and Buddhist temple location, which was kind of interesting because going back to the Meiji era, a lot of Buddhist temples were destroyed. So it was this beautiful example of a early Buddhist temple that not only was still around, but right next to a Shinto temple. So it's this beautiful thing of like two very different cultures coming together as friends, very similar to Japanese and my culture.
I love it. We're going to have her come back sometime and just talk about the comic books and the art.
Maybe.
Thanks for joining us today for an adventure in history.
Go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us for an adventure in history. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.